This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from Tantalk Radio Network's studio in glorious Clearwater, Florida. The perfect place for writers to write and for readers to enjoy a good book. This half hour is brought to you by Larson & Larson, and it should be because I have Bill Larson sitting right here in the studio with me. So it's not only sponsored by him, but he's here to act as our legal eagle and tell us some interesting information that all writers need to know. And then stay tuned, because at the bottom of the hour, I have a special guest, Angela Hunt, whose latest book, the third in her series of treacherous women, is Delilah. And I'm so excited to talk to her because it's a really great book. And so she's going to be on at 11:30. And meanwhile, I have to mention, too, Bill always brings his beautiful wife into the studio with me, with her, you know, so we can see her. And she's sitting here. She's always very quiet, but I told her if she ever has any comments, I know she loves to read and loves to encourage writers to write. And so I'm just so happy, Mickey, to have you here today. Okay, she's very quiet, but whenever she has something to say, I hope she'll say it, because I know you'd love to read. And hi, Bill.
Good morning.
Oh, great. It's so nice to have you. So many things have been happening. The other day, I was talking to Clive Cussler, and he's going to be a guest for his 85th birthday on July 15th. And for anyone who doesn't know Clive Cussler, he's written a quarter billion books. A quarter billion.
That's a lot.
That's with a B. A billion. Ah! Can you imagine? Just one, his famous Dirk Pitt series, he sold 100 million books just of that one series. And he has five series, so you know, he's not doing too badly out there. But the reason I mention him is that there was a very... and it was very hard to ask him about it, but you know, it's always something that comes up. He faced a very big legal problem at one point in his life, a very big problem, and he lost the case. Now, in his, you know, even with all his experience and with all his knowledge and all his, you know, influence, it always is very important for a writer to have a good lawyer. Because although we will mention it during the interview, it is, of course, a touchy subject with Clive. He had to pay $10 million. Now, of course, for him, $10 million... even for him, it's a lot of money. So you see, there are always legal problems, aren't there, Bill?
Yes.
Yes. That's why all writers need a legal eagle who can protect them.
Right. We try to head it off at the pass by doing things right.
That's right. That's what happens. Sometimes a writer will go ahead and sign something or agree to something, and in the case you know, where you give up rights and you don't realize that you've given up rights until the day comes that you discover it, and then it's too late.
Right. It's careful planning in the beginning.
Exactly.
One of the important things is, as you're authoring your work, is to date it and sign it, maybe notarize it or record it in some way. So if you have to go back in time and prove that you were the person that actually authored those words, created that character or that scene, then you can prove that you did it on that day.
And get a copyright.
And get a copyright. So a lot of people want to, we've talked about mailing it to yourself. What a better form of proof is to document as you're writing it, as a scientist would do with a lab book when they're creating an invention like a pharmaceutical or a machine. What they do is they keep a book and they record it every day. And every day they write a little note that this is what they did on this day. And they sign it and they date it. And that is the best form of proof in a court of law later that you did, in fact, create that on that day.
So this is something
sign it and date it.
Exactly.
And keep it in a safe or something.
So there are so many times in a writer's life where the question of legal rights come up, and one of those is a big one, it has to do with cover art. Now, if you are being published by a major publishing house, they have lawyers up there. You know, they have like dozens of lawyers who go through every image that is used in a book, and they make sure that that they have a right to use it. But the problem always arises with independent authors, indie authors who
are not artists.
Exactly, who are not artists, or who you know, you can self-publish very easily on Amazon. And you upload the book, and you upload the cover, and Amazon will put it out there. But, you know, and it's not up to them.
Right, what do you do about the cover art?
Exactly.
Because if you're not an artist, you're just an author, you're going to have to get that cover art somewhere, and you're going to get that from an artist. And if you get that from the artist, you have to make sure that the copyright in the art is transferred from the artist to the author, so that the author is the only person that can use that cover art.
Now, there are quite a few on the internet, quite a few groups or
places
organizations
you can go,
that sell cover art.
Right.
One of the most popular is called Fiverr, because the idea originally was that they charge you $5. Eventually, it's gotten much more, but the idea is that you tell them what you want, and they do it.
Right. Well, Fiverr is a forum that brings persons that want to purchase art with people that create art. And then they transact between the two. They don't actually create it for you. They find you an artist that can do it.
Exactly.
And if you look in the terms and conditions of the website, it does say that the copyright is transferred from the artist to the purchaser as part of the purchase. Okay. But as we talked about earlier this week, it'd be best to have an additional copyright assignment and get that artist to sign that in addition to the terms and conditions of the site, just to make sure that you know you own the copyright in the art. And what that means, owning the copyright in the art, is that you're the only person now that can reproduce it. If you don't have something signed, in writing, signed by the artist, then the artist still owns the copyright, which means they can resell the art, they can reproduce the art, and you can't.
And well, this is something that really has to be looked at, because on Fiverr there are some of the artists will right up front say you can buy the copyright.
Correct.
A lot of the artists don't say that, and they say for professional use, for personal use, and so it's,
so there's
it's
a discrepancy.
Exactly.
It's not clear. And so to make it clear, you can use that one-page document, the document I provided to you, which is recognized by the courts. It's called a copyright assignment, and it just has a few magic words, right? A couple of sentences that says that this person sells or assigns, they say in the law, the copyright to the purchaser, which in this case would probably be the author or the publisher. And once that occurs, that artist can't go back in time later, resell it to anybody else, or tell you not to use it in any other format. You own the copyright. And the copyright is different than the art itself, right? The art itself is something that's tangible. It's on a piece of paper. It's a digital image. But the copyright is a legal right, which is different than the image. The copyright is the legal right to reproduce and publish. And that's what's so important.
Okay. Now, say you buy this, you get the professional version, and you have the copyright. Now, the cover is very beautiful,
right,
and you really like it, and other people really like it, and they want to buy it. That art belongs to you, so if you print 500 posters and sell them, that is yours.
That's your right, if you own the copyright.
If you own the copyright.
Right, because the copyright is the legal right to reproduce and publish. And the last thing you want, if you're an author, is to have your cover art on somebody else's work.
Exactly.
You want it exclusively for yourself. And in order to perfect that exclusivity, to own that and stop anybody else in the world from using that art in any other way, you have to not only pay the person money, but you have to get the copyright. And that's that one-page document that we talked about.
And I have seen...
And they're online.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. But I have seen covers where the same cover is used for different books, and that it drives me crazy. And I particularly remember one cover that was used, and it's very strange. It's a silhouette with a person and a few other objects, and it's been used on mystery stories. It's been used on erotica. It's been used on romance. The same exact cover, and it drives me crazy to see that.
Right. And so if you want to stop that from happening, you have to gain the copyright. In that case, probably the copyright was not transferred, so the artist keeps selling it in different formats for different genre.
Yes, absolutely. And he sells it to anybody. I don't know.
Where we see the problem the worst is in the context of websites. And this is the way it happens. So you go and you want to get a website started, but you're not an artist. You're not a graphics person. So you go and you hire somebody, okay? And maybe they're taking care of your website and they're creating all these graphics and you're paying them money to take care of it for you, but you never sign a copyright agreement, okay? The copyright, in other words, the images, the text, and the graphics and the website are not transferred from the web guy over to the person who owns the website, right? The business person. And then there's a fallout, usually over money, right?
Yes.
Arguing, oh, you owe me money, I don't owe you money. And then the web person either tries to shut down the website or something similar to that. Well, in often cases, you may have the art saved yourself, maybe on another server or something. So you say, I'm not paying you any more money, Mr. Web Guy. I'm getting my new web guy, and I'm going to get it all up and running again. I go to my server. I download all the images and text that I had saved from my website, and I just put them on a different URL, and I have a different web guy. Well, if you don't have the copyright, the old web guy is going to come and say, you can't do that because you don't have the copyright. And they'll shut your website down. And I see this over and over. That's the worst context. So even if you're a publisher, you're an author, or if you're a business person, you have to make sure that any graphics and art that you use on your website, you obtain the copyright in by having a copyright assignment as part of the money that you pay to purchase the images or graphics themselves.
Now, I know some independent authors who have run into this kind of problem,
mm-hmm.
and they've worried about it, and they've, you know, worried about buying somebody else's art, and so they come out with the idea to do their own, and maybe perhaps taking a photo. Now, I know I had read that Hershey's candy bar sued an author who was writing a book actually about the history of chocolate. I think it was the history of chocolate, and used a Hershey's candy bar on the cover.
Mm-hmm.
Which Hershey's didn't want.
Yeah, because they have a trademark in that.
They have a trademark. So although the author took a photograph of, so the photograph was theirs.
Right, she owned the copyright, but the Hershey's owns the trademark, so you have competing intellectual property rights, and one trumps the other.
Of course, in Hershey's case, Hershey
has a lot of money.
Everybody.
Yeah, Hershey is very protective of their trademarks, like the Hershey's Kiss, for instance,
uh-huh.
The shape of that little chocolate, what looks like a teardrop, is a very important trademark for Hershey. And they protect that, and they don't want you to use it in any format.
Well, yeah, I can imagine it would be very bad for their image, for example, if you were doing a mystery story, mm-hmm. and you used a Hershey's candy bar and poured blood on it or something.
How about if you wanted to make a T-shirt and you wanted to take a artistic rendition of the Hershey's Kiss and put it on the shirt and sell it? Even if you didn't say Hershey's, can you do it? No,
I don't think so.
And I defended somebody who did that against
really?
Hershey. Yeah, so it does happen. Yeah, you can't use that in any format. You can't use it to sell candy, and you can't put it on the cover of your book, and you can't put it on a T-shirt, and you can't put it on your website. They own that picture.
They own that.
Mm-hmm.
So it is something that you have to use.
You have to be careful about.
Yeah.
Where you get your art, where you get your images, and are you buying something that's already been plagiarized, so you're buying something you can't use? You have to be careful about that. Right. In addition to getting the copyright, you may want some warranties or representations by the artist that the artist has not plagiarized somebody else and that they have the right to transfer the art and the copyright to you.
Now, for example, nobody owns the Eiffel Tower. You can take a picture of the Eiffel Tower and use it whenever you want.
Correct, because that's public domain.
That's public domain. What about if you write a book about, I was reading a case where it was about a sports figure.
Yes.
And somebody took his photo, I guess, and used that.
Yeah, can't do it.
Can't do
unless it's for the purposes of news or some kind of parody. But you can't use it in a commercial setting.
So say you do a book about, I don't know,
or you can't,
LeBron
you,
James.
Or you can't, right, and you can't use people's names also if they're used inaccurately or improperly. I was doing some research because you said we wanted to talk maybe about some cases, and I was looking at the American Sniper case where Jesse Ventura sued the sniper and then later his estate after he passed on for improperly using his name and alleging a certain incident that happened one day in a restaurant. And Ventura won the case for millions of dollars because he improperly used his name.
And now he's hated by millions of people. because he did that lawsuit.
Right, and so that was bad. So you want to watch out for plagiarism. That's the number one thing in author. That if you get accused of plagiarism, I mean, that's pretty much it for you in authorship. So you have to be careful about the art you're going to use, and also when you're developing characters and scenes and such like that, that your mind, either consciously or unconsciously, has not adopted something that's already else out there, so that you would be accused of plagiarism. You want to be very careful about that.
And, of course, I've read some horror stories recently about people who actually copy the entire paragraph.
Right. And so going back to what we were talking about before, if you date everything as you're writing it and somebody accuses you of plagiarism later, you can show that you developed that character or that scene or that idea earlier in time, which is another one of the things that happened to Rowling when she was accused of stealing the idea from Muggles, I think it was, one of the words in the book. And they later found out that she did not have access to that, and that the person that accused her of plagiarism was actually the fraud herself.
So,
Actually fined by the court $50,000 for bringing that case against Rowling.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I didn't hear.
So you have to be careful and document because people will accuse you of plagiarism. And so it's very important to be able to prove that you did not plagiarize anybody else.
Well, so that is why, and I think Clive Cussler is going to add a little to that, why you need a good lawyer. And I want to congratulate you. Larson & Larson has had some great news this week. What was that?
Two of our lawyers have been nominated as super lawyers.
Wow, super lawyers. Would you give them a cape?
Yes, I get it.
Yeah, you give them an actual
Superman cape.
Yeah, you give them a cape to walk around the office for a day. Huh?
Yes.
So that's nice. So that's fantastic.
Well, they're great guys, and they're excellent attorneys and good people.
Okay. Well, that's
and they're super lawyers because they care about their clients.
Well, that's the important thing. That's what every writer needs is a super lawyer to protect them and to make sure that
bounce those ideas off. Some of the things we've talked about today, the authors can take to heart and make sure that they're making that as part of their program. Write the stuff down. Get your copyright assignments.
And they can come and see you for a free consultation.
That's right.
How do they do that?
They can call me at 727-546-0660 or my website, Larson Patent Law. In addition to doing copyrights and authorships, we do patent law.
Okay.
Inventions.
And inventions, and I know that. as I said, you know, when I go to writers' conferences, they're always asking me legal questions, and that's why I'm so happy to have you come in once a month to remind the writers of what they need to know, what they need to think about, because you get so busy as a writer, you just lock yourself there with your story, and you're so busy with it, and you just write and write and write. Months can go by, and you don't think of all of these other things.
And it's also right side, left side of the brain. Artistic people are not legally oriented. I don't know why. And so it doesn't seem as important to them for whatever reason, just the way people think. And so inventors and artists and authors and stuff, they're so dialed into what they're doing, they forget that they have to protect themselves on the legal side. So reach out, talk to a copyright attorney, an intellectual property attorney, and it's very easy and it's not that expensive to protect your rights.
And, you know, writers, you don't know what's going to happen. I was last week I spoke to a young author who was writing on Wattpad. She never expected that her work would take off. And in, I think, about 6 months, she had 30 million reads. I mean, 30 million times people clicked to read her work. Well, of course, as soon as the publishers heard about that, they were sending her contracts, and they were trying to sign her up, because when you have that many people, and
it happens quickly,
and you have to be prepared.
Right. You want to know your rights in advance.
Yes.
So you don't want to wait until after the fact to start figuring out, oh my God, what do I have to do with this contract? Just hope that you're going to be famous, and talk to a lawyer about what should I expect if this goes to the moon, if this becomes really popular, what do I need to know? And that lawyer will tell you that, and you can be prepared, so when it happens, you have a plan.
Here I have Bill Larson, a man with a plan for all writers, and it's just, I want to thank you again for coming in today.
My
and
pleasure.
I want to thank you for updating me about your super lawyers. I think it's fantastic.
Thank you.
And I look forward to having you back next month, and we're going to be talking together in September. We're going to be giving
a lecture.
Well, we're going to try to make it an enjoy.
Something more exciting than a lecture.
Yeah, it's going to be a comedy hour with law. So I'm looking forward to that, and that's going to come up in September. We'll be at the St. Pete's main library downtown.
And if our listeners have questions, send them on in, and we'll answer them.
Exactly.
That's what we're here for.
Okay, well, thank you so much again.
My pleasure.
And it was nice to see Mickey. Read something interesting this month, and you can tell us about it next time you come in. Hey, Mickey?
Okay.
That would be good. We'd love that. Okay?
Wonderful.
Okay, thanks so much. And we'll be back in after these commercials with Angela Hunt.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you an author? An artist? An inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Hi, I'm John Rakowski with Charles Ruttenberg Realty. Don't you love living here in the Tampa Bay area? Oh, I'm sorry, you don't live here yet? Well, if you already are or thinking about it, call me at my office at 727-538-9200 extension 2 for any real estate needs, including a free market analysis of your home. Your home is worth more than you can imagine. Call me today at 727-538-9200 extension 2. I'm John Rakowski.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I'm back with one of my favorite authors, Angela Hunt. And we're going to be talking about her latest book, Delilah, Treacherous Beauty. It's a third in her series of Treacherous Beauties. Hi, Angela.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. Oh, it's so nice to talk to you. You know, I just love the book. The problem with your books is that, you know, once you start reading them, you can't put them down.
Oh, it's very kind of you to say that.
Well, it is. Oh, well, they're always great, and this one is particularly great. You have done an amazing job of bringing Delilah to life.
Oh, thank you. There's not much about her anywhere else, is there?
No, there isn't. I mean, you've really taken a sketch, and as you say, you take sketches and you turn them into oil paintings, and you have really done a masterpiece here.
Oh, thank you so much.
And as you said, there's so little to work with. What we read in the Bible is very few lines. I mean, there's not a lot there.
No, there's not. Fortunately, there are other books, though, about the Philistines and the culture and the time. And so I had lots of background information to draw from, and I just sort of worked with that.
Well, you have immersed yourself into the entire biblical period. You did that with Esther, and you did it with Bathsheba, and now with Delilah. It's a lot of research.
It is, but it's a good thing I enjoy it.
Well, of course, you have a background in religion.
Mm-hmm.
What is your degree?
Well, I have two doctorates. One is in biblical literature, and the other one is in theology proper.
So that has served you well.
Oh, thank you. I hope so.
And you enjoy it. So that's the most important thing. And when you got to, you know, this is the third in the series. How many books do you plan in this series?
Just three.
Just the three.
I've moved on. I've started a new series that I'm calling The Silent Years that probably will stay as the series title. But I started thinking, you know, when my publisher said, okay, what do you want to write next? I started thinking, all the other Bible characters have pretty much been done to death. And I thought, what has nobody really written about? What is something I don't know anything about? Because I love learning new things. And then it hit me, those 400 years between the Old Testament and the New Testament, the time between Zechariah and Matthew, as it were, and that is a fascinating period in Jewish history. And I thought, I knew there were some Maccabees in there, and I knew that somehow by the time Christ was born, we had Pharisees and we had Sadducees and we had a temple, a rebuilt temple, but I didn't know how any of that came about. So I sort of said, okay, I'm going to do another series based on the silent years, and I'm going to try to take stories of women from during that time so that my readers can learn along with me about everything that happened in those 400 years.
Well, you do such amazing work in immersing yourself in the period and then really fleshing out the story with in the case with the Samson and with Delilah's story. What was your, I know you tell the story through two points of view.
Mm-hmm.
Explain a little bit how you did this, how you came about writing the story, and what's your sort of take on Delilah?
Well, I knew right off through my reading, I discovered a couple things that really sort of surprised me. First of all, I was surprised that so many people looked at Samson as a failure, or they hold him up as a moral example of what we should not be. And, all right, so he fooled around with women three times. King David did as much and more, and yet we revere him as a hero. So, you know, what's the problem here? And Delilah, I read reference books that just described her as a fiend from hell, and I thought, okay, people have reasons for the things they do. And if she was living with Samson, she must have at least felt something good for him. But what would make a woman turn on a man she was supposedly in love with? And so I set about to find those reasons. You know, criminals justify their crimes. Even psychopaths will do things to sort of numb the pain, like they won't refer to their victim by name, for instance, because it's too troubling to the conscience. So there has to be, I just knew there had to be some reason for Delilah to do what she did, and then it was my job to come up with a credible backstory that would explain her motivations and give her some hope for the future, because I don't think it's over for anybody until it's over. And Delilah was still a young woman, so I wanted her to have a little hope.
And the way that you fleshed out the story, you did, of course, you read all the biblical passages. And where did you find, or how did you build the other characters around her? Her, for example, it's her son.
Oh yes. Well, I'm trying to. Now, see, I get confused between what was real in my story. And
that's what I'm wondering, because you.
I have it all before me when I'm working on it, but anyway, I'm pretty sure the Bible does talk about there's a little boy, and he. Yes, he does.
Yes.
I remember
now.
Yeah,
they do.
And Samson says, "Will you help me find those pillars?" And then I thought, wouldn't it just be poignant if that little boy was Delilah's son? Because if he'd been there when she was living with him, then there would be a real relationship between Samson and this boy. And I thought that would just be very, very powerful and very poignant. So I wrote that in. And, of course, Delilah has this child because of some things that happened in her past. And she wasn't even sure she wanted the child in the first place. So her heart softens in a lot of different ways, especially after she's been so abused. And I wrote it in the two points of view, Delilah's and Samson's, because, well, when you choose point of view for a character, the character whose point of view you're using has to be able to see key story events. And there were just so many key story events where Delilah was not present or where Samson was not present. So I knew that I had to use those two characters as point of view characters. And I personally believe that the fewer point of view characters a writer uses, the stronger the emotional bond between the reader and those characters. If a book has 20, you know, point of view characters, 20 people who are doing all these things, you don't really bond as closely because there's just so many of them. It's hard to divide your loyalties. But just by using two, I thought it would work. I could get all the events of the story in and still allow the reader to really sympathize and empathize with Samson and Delilah.
Because you have made this into a love story, and I think many people just from, you know, their little minimal biblical knowledge, always just think of it as Delilah being evil and taking advantage of Samson, and as you said, Samson not being a particularly great guy, and you've really made a very compelling story here.
Oh, well, thank you. I was reading a book about Samson, and the author pointed out something that I had not thought of, and that it was that Samson felt different from everyone around him because his birth was prophesied by an angel. Most people in those days took a Nazirite vow for a set period of time, for 6 years or for, you know, a year or for some period of time. And then after that, they were free to go their merry way. Samson was to be a Nazirite for life, even including his prenatal period. His mother was not to drink any wine or even eat grapes while she was pregnant with Samson. And so because of that, he always has these prohibitions hanging over his head. He feels different just than everybody else because nobody else has the rules stamped on them like Samson does. And so then when he meets Delilah, I wrote her, scripture does not say whether she is Philistine or Israelite. You can make a case either way. And so just to even up the score, I decided she should be neither. I wrote her as with a backstory of she was born in Egypt from an Ethiopian mother and a Cretan father. He was from Crete. And so she's mixed race girl, and she's quite lovely, but she doesn't really belong to any particular culture. And then plus she leaves Egypt behind, so the Egyptian culture she grew up with is totally gone, and then she finds herself transplanted in Philistia, where things are completely different, the culture's different, she looks different from everyone else. She's not Israelite, she doesn't know about the God of Israel. So she feels as odd and alien as Samson does, and so that's why they click.
And from there, it becomes... One thing is just fantastic with your writing. It is, you know that what's going to happen at the end, but
yeah.
you create this, the sort of the mystery and the little tingle there of what's going to happen next.
Yes, about... Will they make it out? And, you know, I made the mistake. I don't think I should have done this, but I made the mistake of watching the old Samson and Delilah movie starring Victor Mature and that gorgeous red-haired lady. I forget her name. Anyway, it's an oldie but goldie. And so the ending, I kept trying to think of some way to end it that wasn't like the movie because I didn't want to even come close to that or copy it or whatever. But there were some elements I just thought it kind of has to be this way. So it is a little bit similar to the ending of that movie just because I couldn't think of a better way to do it. They did it very well.
Oh, they did. And well, it's funny when you mention the movie, because of course it was Hedy Lamarr.
Yeah, that was
one of my favorite actresses, and of course Victor Mature. You know, you know, not perhaps the most brilliant actor, but physically he was quite a hunk there.
Yes, he was.
Wow.
And she was gorgeous and brilliant. In real life, she was like a physicist or something. I read a thing on her.
Oh, yeah, she patented a system for submarines that helped in World War II. She was really brilliant, and I've always really she's been one of my favorite actresses forever. And it's funny when if somebody's seen the movie, of course they're thinking about how Victor Mature looks, which of course you describe a little bit differently. You're Samson in the.
Yeah, I've studied the scriptures, and I don't think if he had been a huge muscle-bound guy, then people would expect him to be the sort of guy who could kill a bunch of people with the jawbone of an ass or pick up the gates of the city and walk away with them if he was this huge hulking guy. But I think the miracle of it all is that he didn't look like the Incredible Hulk. I think he looked more ordinary. And Scripture says, and the Spirit of the Lord came upon him and gave him that supernatural strength. So I think most of the time walking around, he just looked like a long-haired dude, you know, kind of scruffy from travel, because he was a judge, and so he traveled around to all the different villages to adjudicate cases between people and that sort of thing. So I don't think he looked like this huge muscular giant. I think he looked actually pretty ordinary until the Spirit of the Lord came on him.
And then God gave him the steroids he needed.
That's right. He hulked out, I guess.
I guess. So it's really, as I said, I think you did an incredible job. And with all three of the books, I think it's such a wonderful way to get people interested in reading the Old Testament. I'm sure that people who have read your books will then go back and say, well, you know, I want to check that out. I want to see what it actually says. And so I think it's a wonderful, wonderful way to get people interested in reading the Bible.
Well, thank you. That's my favorite thing to hear is when they say, then I had to go back and read the scripture and see, and it's all in there. And I went, yeah, that's very cool.
It is. And I like that at the end of your books, you have questions there. Mm-hmm. What was the idea to do that? How did you get that idea?
Well, I lead a book club. I've led a book club in my home for, oh goodness, maybe almost 14 years now. And so I love it when we have a book and there are discussion questions in the back of the book for us to discuss. And I think discussion questions work not only for people who have book clubs, but for readers who want to know more, want to ponder a little more deeply. And I know that some people read a story like peeling an apple. They just read the surface context. But other people like to delve into the layers. They read it like an onion. They want to peel away the surface and look at the symbols and see what the author was really trying to accomplish, if she, in fact, was. And so I think discussion questions help bring out some of the things that I was trying to do as an author, and I hope it just helps people think more deeply and enjoy the story more thoroughly.
Well, I think they do. I think it's wonderful to have these questions at the end. And I'm sure that many, many churches and synagogues are using your books for the book club, because it just is such a wonderful way to get into the Bible.
Oh, well, thank you.
Well, and, you know, the brilliant thing is that you bring this expertise of the solid background of religion into this and do such a wonderful job.
Oh, well, thank you. That's my fondest wish is, you know, the Bible is the greatest, the oldest, most wonderful book in the world, so... And not as many people are reading it these days as used to be. So I think we all need to get better acquainted with it.
Because there's such a richness there, and it certainly has gotten you to a point where now, how many books have you sold? 10 million, they're saying? More than that?
I I've written 130, and I think they've sold almost 5 million, but I haven't counted.
5 million?
Lately.
Okay. Well, mm-hmm. You're heading up there, and I'm sure that with this new book, it's going to be a really big seller. It just came out on June 7th. Your publisher is Bethany Press, right?
Right. Uh huh.
And they do a beautiful job with the covers.
Oh, don't they? They're all so striking.
Oh, amazing! I think, you know, just to look at the cover of your book is you know, you have to reach out and grab it. You know, off the shelf, mm-hmm. because it is so beautifully done, and did they found the artist for you?
Yes. Well, they have a Bethany House has a team of graphic designers and artists on staff, and they always just blow me away with their covers. They're so good at what they do.
It really top of the line. You can't get anything better than that, and it's so thrilling just to look at the three books in a row.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really, really happy with that, and when I read, when I find an author who I really admire, it's so thrilling for me, and I want to tell people that you have also a very nice website, and it's called Angela Hunt Books.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And books.com, right? It's .com.
Exactly.
AngelaHuntBooks.com. And people can go there to see more about what you, about the current book and what's coming up, which really sounds exciting. You're going to be doing a lot of research here.
I am. Yesterday, I delivered a breech baby. It was my first one in the book, of course.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, I write about things, and I have to think, oh, my goodness, I better learn. How would you do that? How would you deliver a breech baby if you were a midwife in ancient Rome? So it's all fascinating to me.
Well, that's one of the wonderful things about being a writer is that you can just go back in time if you want or in the future and just bring people to life.
Mm-hmm.
And whether it's by breech birth or whatever, it's an exciting thing.
Oh, it sure is. It's fun.
And I know that you're very encouraging to writers. And recently here in our area, we're starting a local writer's book nook at the Miami Avenue mm-hmm. Wine Bar and Art Gallery. It's going to be called Miami Avenue Book Nook. And because we want to promote local writers here, we have so many visitors coming to the beach, and we have so many fantastic writers in our area.
Mm-hmm. I just spent this morning putting together a box of things.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And, yeah, I'm excited.
And of course, we have a wonderful community here of writers, and one that I think will really have fun putting their books into the book nook. And that's one of my projects. Like I need another project. Like you, we keep busy, don't we?
Yes, we do. But we so appreciate your support. You're amazing.
Well, thank you, and I want to again thank you and tell everyone they have to get this book because all three of them are wonderful, and the thing is you can read them in any order, so it doesn't matter. And it's just a wonderful book, and I want to thank you so much, Angela, for joining me today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Okay, and so we'll talk to you soon, and keep writing. I don't have to tell you that. Wow, with so many books out there.
All right, thank you so much, Patsy.
Okay, bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Wow, Angela is really amazing. I so admire her work. And I wanted to mention, as I said, her website is AngelaHuntBooks.com. And that's because, of course, at the time when the internet started, she didn't think to register AngelaHunt.com. But if you have a name that's common, whatever it is, Joe Smith, if it's too late to register Joe Smith, do register Joe Smith Books, because that's going to be out of your reach pretty soon. So all of these things are something you have to talk, think about and plan ahead. As Bill Larson, who was in here, said, on the legal side, you have to plan ahead and you have to think about these things. And one of the exciting things, I'm going to be talking to Clive Cussler about all of what he has done over the years. Now, when you mention somebody has sold a quarter billion books, that's a lot of books. But there's a lot that's gone into it. And he was very clever, and having worked as somebody in the advertising industry, he was able to have that two-sided brain. The brain saw the one that writes, and then the one that puts on the business head and thinks about how to turn his books into a success. Granted, he's very talented, but I've met recently several writers who are very, very talented, and their books aren't selling. And they say to me, well, what am I going to do? How am I going to do this? And because they really have not planned. They have not planned ahead. They have not, mentally, they have not gotten their mind around the idea that they have to also sell. They're hoping, and in one case, a gentleman, he's published by a small publisher. It's not a major publisher, but it's a nice publisher. They've done a great job on the book. Everything is very well done. The book cover is very, very well done. But being a small publishing house, they don't have the funds to do a major, launch across the United States. So even he, he thought, well, I've got the book done, and I've got it with a publisher, and they're printing it, and they're doing a beautiful job, real top quality paper. They've done a hardback, so it's not a simple paperback book. But the problem is that it's not selling. And he didn't understand, really, he was not psychologically ready to accept the fact that he had to sell. Now, for example, in Clive Cussler's case, having been working in an ad agency, he knew the importance of mottos, of quick one-line things to help sell his books. And this is what he did. He just said, I'm going to sell so many books. And so, again, it's a mindset. And I hope that all of you who have your books out there and are wondering what to do. I also interviewed on Tuesday a very nice guy. And I would suggest maybe you look at his website. And he's called The Literary Mercenary. And he has also analyzed how to sell books, and he's young and he's really, starting out. His name is Neil Litherland, and his website is very well organized. So you have subject after subject on, like, how to market your books, how to write thank you notes. Basically, you have to write thank you notes to everybody that you meet or everybody who does anything for you. So he has all sorts of advice, and I really found his website to be one of the, as a blogger, he's well organized, and his advice is very good, and it's called Literary Mercenary. And I would check it out if I were you, if you're planning to launch your book, or you're relaunching your book, or you are trying to think of how am I going to get out there and meet people. So one of the ways, of course, is, as I said, we have now the local authors here in this area. We're going to have a book nook where local authors can come and put their books, and we're going to have events at Miami Avenue, located in Indian Rocks Beach. And we will have an opportunity for writers to talk to and get to meet readers. But the important thing is that it's a process, and we're hoping that to launch not just this book nook here, but wherever you are, find an area, find your local writers, and get together and start some type of location, some type of place where you can put your books and where you can get noticed and start selling. There, you have to have a goal plan, and that's important to all artists. Next week I'm going to, I have some wonderful guests coming up in the entire month, But as I said, my biggest one is Clive Cussler, and I'm really excited about having him on. So that's going to be for his 85th birthday. Now, meanwhile, I have told everyone that the San Francisco Writers Conference book contest has opened up for submissions, and I suggest you get your submissions in early. It's good to do them during the summer because a lot of the people who read these submissions are available in the summer, and they start to read them, and it's an opportunity to really get noticed, and it's really one of the very, very best contests. So that's coming up, and what else? Hey, Ed in the control room. How are you?
Very good, thanks.
Okay, I know I don't thank you enough. I have to thank you every program, but I get so tied up with all of these fantastic authors that I'm talking to, and I sometimes forget the time, and I know you're waving in there. He waves at me, 5 minutes, 4 minutes, he's doing a countdown.
No, I'm just listening.
No, it's wonderful.
That lady sold 5 million books. Is that what she said?
Yeah, 5 million books.
Wow.
Yes, and she's a local writer, and right here in town. I mean, just think of it, 5 million books, and it's fantastic. And I know she's going to sell many. With this new book that she came out with, is going to be a really good seller. But again, she's one of these authors who she's determined, and she works hard, and. And really gets out there and promotes herself. So it's going to be a long weekend, a nice weekend for all of those people going to the beach or laying out in the hammock. I don't know if we're going to lay out in the hammock.
Too hot for that.
It's too hot.
Hammock will burst into flame.
But maybe in the house under the air conditioner. Are you going to read a book this weekend, or are you working?
This weekend I may put the hammock inside the house where the air conditioning is.
That's a good idea, and find a good book and read, because it's a wonderful way, and you really have to get off of the television, and there's just too much. It after a while just your mind starts deteriorating. I think we can just take there's too much of news sometimes. So find a good book and go into another world. And Neil Litherland's short stories, steampunk short stories, are really lots of fun. And I was amazed at how good they are. And as I said, he's a literary mercenary. And again, on Friday, tonight's Thursday, is Jazz Night at Miami Avenue Wine Bar. And on the weekend, they have live dancing. And of course, there's all sorts of events happening in Indian Rocks in general. And all over Clearwater, and I think we're going to have fireworks. Are we back to having fireworks, Ed? Do you know they're going to have fireworks? Okay, well, I hope they have fireworks, and I hope everyone is safe.
And all you have to do is drive down the beach, and you'll find fireworks everywhere.
Exactly. So have a good time. Have a wonderful weekend, and see you next Tuesday. Bye.